This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio@sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at SportsTalkNet. The Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. It's Wednesday, May 16th, 2012. I encourage you to send your emails to studio@sportstalknetwork.com. That's S-T-U-D-I-O at sportstalknetwork.com. Got a lot to do today, going right to the NBA playoffs. Two games last night, two interesting games. The Miami Heat, you know by now, Chris Bosh out indefinitely. Doesn't sound like he's going to play in the Pacers series. Got that strained abdominal muscle after dunking in Game 1. The Heat held on to win Game 1, but yesterday, Game 2 in Miami, Indiana 78, the Miami Heat 75. You got to give Indiana a lot of credit. Miami obviously frustrated. Wade with a flagrant foul on Nick Collison in the fourth. LeBron James very frustrated getting into, I don't want to say fisticuffs, but tie-ups, if you will, with a couple of guys on Indiana. He also missed two gigantic free throws with 54 seconds left, down one. Let's face it, no matter how good you think LeBron is, and obviously he's one of the greatest players ever, and they gave him his third MVP. I'll say it again. I don't know how you get an MVP when you got Bosh and Wade on your team. But down the stretch in the final minute, maybe you saw the stat, from the foul line this past year in a one-possession game with less than a minute to go, James was 10 for 17 from the foul line. That's 58%. That's woeful. Yesterday, he missed two big ones, down one with 54 seconds left. You look at his stat line, it's fantastic. 28 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 6 steals, on and on and on. But when push came to shove, he missed those two free throws. He also was only, well, he was 10 for 22 from the floor, but he was 0 for 4 from the three-point line. And that's really the reason I think Miami lost. Miami 1 for 16 from three-point line. That's 6%. They shot 34.6% for the game, 27 for 28. Wade 8 for 22. Chalmers 2 for 10. Haslam 2 for 5. Turiaf 1 for 3. I mean, they just got nothing going. Give Indiana credit. And again, just like with Chicago losing Rose, Bosh isn't Rose to Miami, but he is a big part of what they do. He is that guy who can hit a jumper. He is that guy who on the pick and roll can step back and make a shot. They really don't have that guy anymore. He's not there. I still think Miami's going to win the series, but yesterday, Indiana 78, Miami 75, West playing very well, 16 points, 10 rebounds for Indiana, Hill with 15 points and 4 rebounds, Granger 11 points, 6 rebounds, and he had a terrible shooting game, 5 for 14. I mean, it's amazing to me that Granger shoots 5 for 14 and Paul George shoots 4 for 11 and Indiana still wins. George with 10 points and 11 rebounds, Hibbert, their big man, with 8 points and 11 rebounds and 3 blocks. So give Indiana a lot of credit. Obviously, this is going to be a series now. Indiana steals home court advantage from Miami, and Miami's going to have to go back to the drawing board. They need to be able to set up their guys for open threes. Mike Miller 0 for 2, Jones 0 for 3. Shane Battier, the only guy who made a 3, 1 for 1. So their bench was 1 for 6 from threes. And their starters were 0 for 10. Now, look, James has improved a little as a three-point shooter. He was terrible yesterday. Wade is a bad three-point shooter. Bosh, when he plays, is a bad three-point shooter. Chalmers missed a three at the buzzer. There was a lot of talk again down the stretch. Who's taking the last shot? Well, LeBron wound up sending a pick to try and spring Chalmers and then was just hanging out in the corner doing nothing. Wade had the ball, passed it to Chalmers. Chalmers missed a three at the buzzer to tie. Indiana 78, Miami 75. Indiana ties up the series at 1, and now it goes back to Indiana for two games. Hard to see Miami winning a championship if Bosh doesn't come back, just like it was impossible to see Chicago winning a championship without Derrick Rose and later Noah getting hurt. So Pacers tie up the series. You got to give them a lot of credit. Give Frank Vogel a good young coach. Give him a lot of credit as well. Indiana steals one from Miami in Miami. The other game yesterday, the Clippers go down to San Antonio to play the Spurs. Game one, Spurs 108, Clippers 92. The Spurs with 13 for 25 from three. I mean, that's unbelievable, 52% from three. They shot better from three than from two. Kawhi Leonard, 3 for 3 from three. Green, 3 for 6. DL, 1 for 2. Ginobili, 3 for 8. Neal, 1 for 2. Anderson hits his only one. Jackson, 1 for 2. 13 for 25 from threes. If you shoot that from three, you're going to win. Duncan has turned back the clock. I don't know what else to say. 26 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Ginobili is Ginobili off the bench. 22 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Tony Parker had a very poor game. Still managed 11 assists, but only 1 for 9 from the field. 2 rebounds, 4 turnovers. But 11 assists with his 7 points. And San Antonio won by 16. So they're going to be tough to beat. But again, you're going to need Griffin and Paul to play at a very high level. They didn't really yesterday. Chris Paul, 3 for 13 from the field, 6 points. He did have 10 assists and 5 steals, but he also had 5 turnovers. They need Paul at the top of his game and Griffin. Griffin, 15 points, 9 rebounds. 7 for 17 from the field. You know, that's okay. He's got to be better. Butler with 15 points for Los Angeles, Caron Butler. Bledsoe with 23 off the bench had a good game. Young with 13. As you know, their bench played great in Game 7 against Memphis. But if you're going to beat the San Antonio Spurs, you're going to need your superstars to play like superstars. And that did not happen yesterday. The big three for the Spurs, looking for one final run. They've got a good chance to win this series. I think they're the favorites. Duncan playing out of his mind. Ginobili back healthy. Tony Parker will have to shoot better, but he's Tony Parker. So San Antonio gets that win to go up 1-0. San Antonio 108. Clippers 92. Give San Antonio a lot of credit. To me, they've virtually come back from the dead and are the favorites now to win their series against the Clippers. Now, tonight, Boston against Philadelphia. Obviously, one game apiece, Game 3 in Philly. That's tonight on TNT, 7 o'clock Eastern. After that, the Lakers at Oklahoma City. That's also on TNT. Oklahoma City thrashed the Lakers in the first game by 29. It'll be hard for the Lakers to run with Oklahoma City. And then, of course, Game 2 tomorrow, Clippers at San Antonio. Game 3, Miami at Indiana. That's tomorrow. So that's your NBA. We're going to hold the NHL for a few minutes. We're going to have Brian Monzo on after the break. Wanted to get to a couple of other miscellaneous things quickly. Derrick Rose had that surgery on his knee, and, you know, you always hear the surgery was successful. This was pretty interesting because the doctor said there's a chance that Rose will miss all of next season. That's how bad he tore his knee, tore his ACL, and had 2 tears in his meniscus. The most positive spin they would give is that he comes back sometimes in January. So Derrick Rose, who obviously is young and healthy and a hard worker and wants to come back, he will come back, but it's a very open-ended when he will be back. And, of course, as Derrick Rose goes, so go the Chicago Bulls. Now, the Bulls did pick up Tom Thibodeau's option. They had a team option for him for next year, obviously an excellent coach. You know, some Knicks fans really wanted him years ago, excellent defensive coach. But he winds up with Chicago, and he's obviously better off in Chicago with a healthy team than he would have been in New York the last few years. Also, Rick Carlisle, who led the Mavs to their championship last year. Don't know if he had any say in letting the reason they won the championship go. You know, because that's exactly what happened, Tyson Chandler and J.J. Barea. But he got an extension. He's now going to be the Mavs coach for the next 4 years, and deservedly so. He's a very good coach, Rick Carlisle. But again, it's about your players on the court. Dirk Nowitzki, still a superstar. But again, no Chandler, no Barea, no championship. It's the same for next year. And finally, in the NBA anyway, Kyrie Irving, deservedly so. Named the Rookie of the Year, Cavaliers with some hope for the future. They'll have another good draft pick this year. But Kyrie Irving was everything. I thought, personally, you know, only 1 year at Duke, he'd been hurt most of the year. But he clearly showed quickly that he belongs. And he was named the Rookie of the Year, got 117 of the 120 votes, and deservedly so. He's your NBA Rookie of the Year. One football note. Wes Welker signed his $9.5 million franchise tag contract. He wants a long-term deal. And his statement was essentially, you know, I'm trying to do right by the Patriots. Hopefully the Patriots will do right by me. I did want to talk about one baseball note before we get to the break. We're going to come back on the other side and do a lot of NHL. But I did want to talk briefly about this Mets at Milwaukee game. Don't know if you saw the highlights. It was a non-game, Milwaukee 8, Mets nothing. But DJ Carrasco, pitching for the Mets, gave up a home run to Ricky Weeks, I think to make it 8-0. The game was long gone. And the next batter was Ryan Braun, and Carrasco hits him on the shoulder, left shoulder, Braun, a righty batter, with the first pitch. Kind of looks like he threw at him. The ump immediately throws DJ Carrasco out of the game. Collins goes out and argues. Carrasco argues. Doesn't matter. Carrasco gets tossed. And then David Wright, star of the Mets, Ryan Braun, obviously star of the Brewers, especially with Fielder gone. Collins decides he's going to take David Wright out of the game because he was fearful that Milwaukee would throw at David Wright, which, you know, that's probably a good fear. But the ensuing argument in the dugout was fascinating because Wright did not want to come out of the game. And I'm going to write an article about this, I think, tomorrow, because Collins had some very, very interesting things to say. And he said things like, and you don't like the way he said it, but here's a quote. Quote, I got news for you, talking to the media after the game. Quote, I got news for you. In this game, there are unwritten rules. And one of the unwritten rules, you hit my guy, I'm hitting your guy. Well, they're not hitting my guy tonight, meaning Wright. That's why he took him out of the game. Now, Wright, to his credit, he had a great quote afterwards. He said, quote, he said, Ryan gets hit, and then I go up there and get hit, and then everything's settled, close quote. And that's how it's been done for, I don't know, 100 years? 80 years? 120 years? That's how it's been done forever in baseball. So while Collins is protecting his player, and you can respect that and understand it, the reality is I don't think Milwaukee's going to forget this. So I'll have to check the Mets schedule, see when they play Milwaukee again. And I think you got to circle that date on your calendar if you're Milwaukee. There's no doubt in my mind Wright's going down next time they play. He might have put off the obvious. But I just found that interesting. Milwaukee buries the Mets, but the whole thing with hitting a guy, again, is as old as the game itself. This is the Steve Callis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn. It's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. What's new?
I'll tell you what's new, but you've got to promise to keep it a secret. I don't want this to get back to my customers at the
spa. Now I've got to know. Come on, tell
me. I found this skin cream called Esotique that's simply amazing for my dark circles, brown spots, and wrinkles. All my customers are asking me what I'm doing for my skin, so I just tell them I had plastic surgery. If they find out about Esotique, they're going to stop coming to my
spa. Esotique will tackle your dark circles, wrinkles, and age spots, leaving you with young and radiant skin. The results will astonish you. Call now for your risk-free supply of Esotique. 800-824-3854. That's 800-824-3854. Say goodbye to dark circles, age spots, and wrinkles. Supplies of Esotique are limited, so call now. 800-824-3854. That's 800-824-3854.
Hikari, established in 1877 with more than 130 years of experience, is the world's foremost authority on aquatic nutrition. We know what it takes to offer you and your aquatic pets nutrition that can help them look their best and live a long and healthy life. If you're looking for the best aquatic diets for your hard-earned dollar, look no further than Hikari, the aquatic nutrition leader worldwide. For further information, visit HikariUSA.com and our direct link at BlueZooRadio.com. Off the Bench with Josh Scarr and Scotty Bickford, Mondays at 4 p.m. on SportsTalkNetwork.com. Blue Zoo Radio with Frank Reese, Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-509-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So, disable the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-509-MYTV.
Right now, to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99 and up to four rooms. And there's no equipment to buy. That includes your free HD TV upgrade, your free DVR upgrade, and your free professional installation. And the best part? The pristine digital picture and sound.
Call 877-509-MYTV.
So, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
Call 877-509-MYTV. 877-509-MYTV.
Disable the cable, cut costs, and get more.
Call 877-509-MYTV. 877-509-MYTV.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back on the Steve Callis Show. Gives me great pleasure to bring back Brian Monzo of WFAN and WCBS 880 in New York City. Brian writes an excellent hockey blog at WFAN.com. I encourage you to take a look at it, but now we're going to get into the playoffs. Brian, thanks for giving me a few minutes.
Hey, Steve. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Everything's good. I hope you'll be able to explain to the audience, though, the Los Angeles Kings, now 10-1 in the playoffs. They beat the number one Vancouver. They beat number two St. Louis. Now they take two at home in Phoenix against Phoenix that goes back to L.A. Give me your sense of the Kings. Are they the hottest team in hockey and right now the Stanley Cup winning favorites?
Well, they're certainly the hottest team in hockey, and you know, I think a lot of the reason is they had the personnel the entire time, and they made that coaching change midway through the season, got rid of Terry Murray, brought in Sutter, and he's been great, and he kind of changed the mentality of the team. The team was very conservative and played, you know, they kind of defense first. They didn't score a ton, and, even though they had a bunch of big bodies and obviously a great goaltender, but with the new addition of the coach and a couple of players that they added, Jeff Carter, they became a bigger, stronger, more physical team, and they think, you know, aggression. And teams don't have a minute or two with the puck, you know, to do anything. And they, if you have the puck, they're going to hit you, and they're going to hit you hard and send you flying. So they play a great brand of hockey, and it's showing as they've dominated the first 2.5 rounds of the playoffs.
So even though the 8th seed, not really an 8th seed because of the coaching change, and obviously they do have the hot goalie in Jonathan Quick, that really makes them a lot more formidable. Is this something you saw at the beginning of the playoffs? I know, for example, Barry Melrose actually picked the Kings to beat Vancouver. Is this something that if someone really followed the Western Conference, they would have seen coming down the stretch because of the coaching change?
Well, I mean, I picked the Kings to win, but based on the goaltending and the fact that I'm not a big fan of the Canucks here, so I don't think that was overly surprising. I think what was most surprising was how they were able to handle the Blues with such ease, a team that didn't give up many goals at all, and they were scoring 4 or 5 goals a night against them, which was ridiculous. So I think that they're definitely, I don't know if they're the favorite to win the Cup because, you know, whether it be the Rangers or the Devils, or, you know, the Coyotes could make some kind of comeback here, but no, the Kings right now are definitely, I would not be surprised if they win, you know, at all.
Okay, Jeff Carter yesterday with the hat trick. Obviously, his second, third, and fourth goals of the playoffs, so he hasn't scored a lot early on. He's viewed to be one of the team leaders. Who else are the team leaders besides the great goaltender, Jonathan Quick?
Well, obviously, U.S.-born, their captain, Dustin Brown, has been great in the playoffs. Had a pretty shaky season. Was actually mentioned in some trade rumors at the deadline. I think the Rangers were involved in those rumors. Now, I don't know if anything really escalated, but he's been great, big physical body. He was on the Olympic team a couple of years back. You also have Mike Richards, the former Flyers captain. You know, he's a big body, a lot of great penalty killing, a lot of speed, a lot of toughness. And Dustin Penner's kind of found himself a little bit playing well out there. Drew Doughty, the great defenseman, a lot of offense there and a big body. You know, so there's a lot to be excited about if you're in the Kings and you're a Kings fan, because they have, obviously, the player personnel to get it done, and now we'll see if they can continue to do it, you know, the rest of the way.
Okay, we'll get to the Rangers-Devils in 1 minute. I did want to ask you about those two hits yesterday. Maybe it's Phoenix frustration, Shane Doan on Trevor Lewis, then Martin Hanzel on Dustin Brown, both knocked into the boards. I haven't heard anything. I checked before I came on the air. Is there any sense of a suspension or a hearing? Has there been any?
No, from what I gather, I don't think there's going to be anything at this point. The Doan one, I think, was a little more unfortunate. I think the player turned his body, just some bad luck. And, you know, the thing with these players is they got to be, you know, it's so hard sometimes to make a right, the proper hit. You know, it's not always on the guy that's hitting the guy. It's on the player getting the hit to not put himself in a position to get hurt.
Right.
So I think the game obviously got a little out of hand. And, you know, obviously Phoenix is probably hitting guys a little harder than they would have at that point. But at this point, I don't think anybody's going to be, getting suspended or at least nothing that I heard.
Okay, we're here with Brian Monzo, WFAN. Let's move now to the Devils and the Rangers. Obviously, the Rangers get out to a good start, 3-0 victory. The Kings shuts out the Devils in the first game. Give me your sense. Home ice, of course, for the Rangers. Game 2 at Madison Square Garden tonight. Give me your sense of the Devils against the Rangers.
Well, I think this is going to be, I know the first game was 3-0 Rangers, and a lot of people look at that as a blowout, but, you know, it was a very tight game for most of the way, and I would expect the same kind of game moving forward. I think the Rangers are going to continue to block as many shots as they can. I think their defense is going to do a good job, and Lundqvist continue to backstop them. And as far as the Devils go, I mean, they obviously have the talent. Kovalchuk's a great player. Parise is a great player. Eliak's a great player. Clarkson's become a good power forward. Zajac's a good player. I mean, the names keep going. Brodeur still is pretty, you know, it's pretty good. I don't think he's what he was, obviously. He's 40 years old, but, and, you know, it's going to be a pretty even series, but I definitely think the Rangers are going to find a way to win it, and I think they're going to win in 5 or 6 games. I'd be shocked if this goes 7, just because the way the Rangers are playing against the Devils, I think this is a good matchup for them, because the Devils play a little looser style of defense, and I think if they fire as many shots as they can as Brodeur, he's got the tendency now, as he's gotten older, to give up the weaker goal. And when he plays the puck, as you saw in game 1, to give the puck away a little bit.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, with the Rangers, even on an off night, and it looked like they were off the first 2 periods. They didn't play great. I mean, it looked like the second period, somebody put marbles on the ice because they were just falling all over the place. But I think the way the Rangers played, they're almost guaranteed, even on a bad night, to give up 3 goals or less. So if they can find a way to score some goals, which has always been a question with them, I think they'll be okay. And I think against the Devils, they can score 3 or 4 goals tonight.
What do you make of this stat? I can't say I was familiar with it, but I'm sure you either knew it before or know it now. The Rangers playing 7 games in the first 2 rounds, and no team that has done that has ever gone on to win the Stanley Cup. Does that concern you? Is it a meaningless statistic? Is it because the Rangers may have to play 26, 27, 28 games if they do go all the way? What's your sense of that, and are you concerned that Lundqvist, who was well-rested during the year, of course, might have just too much to do if this series goes long as well?
No, because, I mean, the Bruins played 25 games last year, and the Rangers are very well, they're trained to play these kind of games. So they probably are tired, it just is natural, but I think the way their bodies are and the way that these guys have been manipulated throughout the whole year, starting in training camp, is that their bodies are fresh and ready to go. And they do have guys like Chris Kreider and Carl Hagelin who are young, and Kreider is basically a set of fresh legs. I know he played college hockey, but that's obviously nowhere near 82 games playing professional hockey. So I think they'll be okay. And like I said, I don't think this series is going to go seven. If they do win it, I see it going five or six, and that could be a huge break for them. And I know if you look at, say, for example, the Kings sweep, they'll have played, you know, what is it, 13 games or something ridiculous like that. I don't think it makes that much of a difference. And I like the fact they're playing every other night. I mean, it keeps them going. Yeah, I think that certainly helped in game one. The Devils had a couple days off. The Rangers didn't. So I don't think that's going to hurt the Rangers whatsoever.
We have a couple more minutes with Brian Monzo of WFAN. Brian, do you have any sense, has there been any indication, I haven't really seen any, but is there a sense one way or the other, depending on how the playoffs go for the Devils, could this be the end for Marty Brodeur, or has he...
I would just think based on his age, that if it's not this year, it'll be the year after. So my gut tells me he's going to come back at least one or two more years, but I haven't heard anything definitive at this point.
Unbelievable, amazing. Okay, that's it for the hockey. I did want to spend a minute or two, if you have some thoughts now on the upcoming Preakness. I won't get to speak to you before Saturday, and I know the draw is not till later today, but do you have any thoughts on the Preakness in terms of a rematch? I'll have another in Bodemeister or maybe some other horse that's coming down the pike.
Well, I mean, it's obviously it's a shorter race, and I think that plays well for a horse like Bodemeister, who, in my opinion, I mean, completely defied the odds and ran a ridiculous Kentucky Derby. Yeah. You know, but the thing with him, I was talking to someone yesterday, is it's almost as if he's due for a regression. He's almost run too well. He ran well in every race, the Arkansas Derby, ran well. It's just he's so fast and so quick, you'd almost think he's due for a little bit of a setback. But, you know, he's been a horse to defy odds. So I'd be stunned if Bodemeister does not win this race. The two other horses that I do like, I'm going to throw I'll Have Another in there, but I kind of like Went Today Well with Velasquez. I just, the way he ran a Derby, he came down with the way he closed the fourth with so much speed. Velasquez, obviously a Hall of Fame jockey and one of the greats. I think he knows now if he makes his move a little earlier, and I think the speed will be a little slower because Bodemeister doesn't have Trinnenberg or Hansen to kind of run out in front of. I think if you're looking to make a little money, looking to play a horse with odds, I'm definitely going to put a little bit on Went Today Well.
Let me ask you one other broad-based horse racing question, Brian. I've written articles for years about the fact that I think in the modern era of thoroughbred racing, just like with, frankly, pitchers in baseball, and nobody pitches on 3 days rest anymore, I thought it would be intelligent if the horse racing community, and I know somebody even like D. Wayne Lucas thinks the time between these races should be spread apart, to go Derby first Saturday in May, 2 weeks later Preakness, 3 weeks later Belmont at a mile and a half. I've written for years now they should do first Saturday in May, first Saturday in June, first Saturday in July for the Triple Crown, and then have the Travers, you know, the fourth, if you will, fourth part of the Triple Crown at the end of August in Saratoga. Do you have a sense, or are you happy with the way things are because this has been the tradition? I think it's going to be almost impossible for any horse to win the Triple Crown now because of the way they're raced. That is very rarely and often a month or 6 weeks apart. What's your thought on that?
It's tough to say. There are parts of that I completely agree with, but I do like the tradition. It's something to look forward to, the 2 and 3 week wait. You know, it's tough to say because you would think there's some of these horses that, you know, that they run, you know, once every 10 weeks, and the other horse that run every 2 weeks or even weekly, you know, across the country. So I'm just not sure. I think I really don't know what's actually best for the horses. I mean, I would think, you know, 3 weeks maybe between races would be best for them to get healthy and be recovered. But, you know, it's so all over the place, it's tough to really define what the proper thing to do is at this point. And I'm not a vet or a doctor to really, you know, to know the facts. But my guess, my opinion would be, you know, every 3 weeks instead of the 2 weeks and then the 3 weeks would probably be best for the horses and for everybody in between.
There's Brian Monzo, NHL expert, horse racing expert. Brian, we'll do it again real soon. Thanks for giving me a few minutes on the Steve Kallis Show.
I appreciate you calling me an expert because I think that's a little, that's very kind of you.
It's my pleasure. We'll do it again soon. Thanks again.
Take care, bud.
This is the Steve Kallis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.